Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 19th, 2013. Can you believe the year is almost over? Well, here on our show tonight, we've got the Germans and the Americans. We've got one of the newer breweries from New York State, Rushing Duck, and one of the oldest breweries in Germany, close to Andechs. So this is a very special show. Thanks to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com. You can check us out anytime, especially on Twitter at Beer_Sessions, and Maggie's tweeting live throughout the show. So definitely at Beer_Sessions. So here we are in the show. It's some new faces. We've got Nikki and Dan from Rushing Duck Brewery up in Chester, New York, one of our favorite new breweries. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks,
we're really looking forward to talking to you tonight. We have Jen from Girls Pint Out.
Hello.
So it's like a beer media and journalism site.
Yeah,
you guys are doing some cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And on the German side, we've got Sylvester from Zum Schneider.
Servus.
Yeah, servus. Lars, the importer.
Hello, how are you?
And our father, Valentin, from Kloster Andechs.
Hello.
So let's start talking about this. This is one of the older breweries in Germany and thus in the world. And Sylvester, tell us about it. You're from that area. Give us some background on the brewery and how it's inspired you in your life's work at Zum Schneider.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Father Valentin to come over all the way from Andechs to be with us this week. It's been quite a piece of work to get Andechs a beer here. I'm from there, as you said it, and grew up there and basically had my first beer when I was 8 years old up there on the mountain, on the Holy Mountain. My parents had visitors from Brazil, and they were heading to Andechs and had some Maas beers, and they were very in conversation, and I just was the only kid around, so I just took the beers and just tried them out, and when we came home, they were missing me because I was on the toilet throwing up.
So tell us, it's near Munich, it's in Bavaria.
It's southwestern Munich, it's in an area called Das Fünfseenland, the Five Lake District, very, very beautiful area with five lakes, obviously. And Andechs is sitting on a very elevated, over here you would call it a mountain, we call it a hill. And it's a beautiful old monastery on a hill, which is visible from many points out there from the lakes.
So why did they start making beer? And why has the beer been so successful to continue for so many
why
years?
Why did they start making beer? Because that is just something that makes people easier to deal with. And so it was one of the most important inventions in the world, and so did they invent it over there in Andechs too. When it comes to the monks, you have to ask some questions, obviously, to Father Valentin, how they see the whole thing about inventing beer in Andechs.
And then with Lars, too, helping out. So, Father Valentin, so is it only priests and monks who are working in the cluster?
No. There are 200 people who works in our monastery in Andechs. It's the brewery is the biggest.
It's the biggest, biggest employer, essentially, of the monastery, and the biggest part that brings money into the monastery as well.
It's an original beer, and it's a beer from the monks, also with a great tradition, and it's an old place.
Lars, what does it mean to you? I mean, you guys are importing it, St. Killian's.
I mean, for us, it's a huge honor to be one of the two importers into the country. And when we got the importation rights for the beer, it already sparked such an interest from everybody around, especially in the Northeast where we have the rights. But there's a lot of history behind the brewery. that also translated over here. Andex supplied the U.S. Army bases in Bavaria with beer for many, many years, decades. And so there's a lot of people that know it because of that. And just to come back to this one point, why does the monastery have a brewery? It's really to finance itself, because the Benedictine monks don't get money from the Catholic Church. So they were forced basically to find sources of income. And the monastery is a perfect thing to do. And it combines it really nicely. It says on every bottle, it says, Genuss für Leib und Seele, which means enjoyment for body and soul. And that's really what this is all about.
So, like, Nikki and Dan from Rushing Duck, I mean, you guys have a brand new brewery. You know, you've only been making beer for a little over a year. I mean, what do you want to... You want to ask a question of these old-time brewery? It's a classic, you know, European brewery, and I don't know. Do you have any specific question? Because...
I'm actually a little bit starstruck because our story isn't anywhere near as romantic as that. yeah, but how do you guys feel about variation? I know you guys have the Rheinsgebot. You're pretty limited with that, but at the same time, there's still a lot of variety within the ingredients. How do you guys work with that?
Well, I can talk for 1 second.
Er fragt, wie man das wegen dem Reinheitsgebot und dass das einen limitiert, aber auch innerhalb des Reinheitsgebots gibt es doch Möglichkeiten, verschiedene Geschmäcker zu produzieren, und wie ihr da drauf kommt und wer auswählt und warum die verschiedenen Geschmäcker gemacht werden.
Oh, it's a Reinheitsgebot, und also Reinheitsgebot vom 1516, und das ist immer noch heute praktisch nach diesem alten Rezept, und es sind nur verschiedene technische Verfahren. Also ursprünglich war es nur Wasser, Hopfen, Malz, und später kam die Hefe dazu. Und alles andere, zum Beispiel bei unserem Doppelbock Dunkel, da kommt eben ein zwei Maische-Verfahren dazu. Also es sind verschiedene technische Verfahren, aber sonst ist es immer nach dem Reinheitsgebot gebraut.
I understand. Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch.
Well, he's saying basically that the Reinheitsgebot was put in place in 1516, and it's still the same thing. The only thing that got added was the yeast. But the different flavors, that was not really answered, unfortunately. Die Fragen nach den verschiedenen Geschmäckern und also nach dem Doppelbock, nach dem Weißbier, nach dem helles Vollbier, Spezialhell, die schmecken verschieden. Für die Amerikaner ist es sehr wichtig, weil die versuchen, Biere zu machen, die eben ganz verschieden schmecken mit, you know. Da kommt auch mal ein Kümmel rein oder Zitrone oder also, sowas.
Das gibt's bei uns nicht.
Ja.
Ja, also das ist sehr malzbetont, das Bier. Weniger hopfenbetont. Diese Bittere natürlich vom Hopfen ist wichtig, aber es ist einfach nur verschiedene technische Verfahren, um den Malz, um den Malzextrakt stärker herauszuholen und so auch eben stärkere Biere zu bekommen.
Okay, so to answer your question, that's I have to answer this all the time at Zum Schneider, my restaurant, because people do ask that. Because you Americans have developed in the last 10 years a huge potential on microbreweries, and you like to play with flavors. We don't do that, and we just still don't do that. Why? Maybe just because it's an old tradition and it should stay that way, but the only difference is really in the Maische, in how much hops get added, or which kind of barley or wheat malt is used. Is it roasted?
Sylvester, so kind of just building on this, and if you speak German, that they had a really great little conversation. We're going to keep talking in German and English through the show. So you know your places. You've always had German beers at Zum Schneider, and you also see the American craft beer revolution. You know that comes back to variation. You know, like I think what they're saying is that American craft beer, we make different styles of beer, different flavors, different variations. I mean, do all Germans prefer to know that this style will taste a certain way, and this is there like a you know, and Lars too.
Well, what I wanted to add to the discussion, and we had this when Alexander Reis, the brewmaster of Andex, was here. His particular point on brewing is to brew the beer to the exact specification. You know, when you talk about a Doppelbock, this Doppelbock should taste exactly the way it should have and has been tasting the last 200 years. And that in itself is a huge challenge, because they've upgraded the machinery, they have upgraded their processes, and you take new equipment, you can't expect to get the same beer out. So they have to always make little adjustments, and that's what their biggest challenge is.
Also das ist eben ein technisches Verfahren, zwei Maischeverfahren. Ein Teil der Maische wird herausgenommen, wird ganz langsam erhitzt und wird dem großen Kuchen dazugegeben, der schnell erhitzt wird, um damit diesen Extrakt vom Malz stärker herauszuholen.
The Doppelbock is a double concoction process, whereas the Dunkelhefe is also a double concoction, but everything else is a single concoction.
So Lars, we just tried two Andex beers. So tell us about the two beers, because this is pretty cool.
We started off with a Helles, which is their Munich-style Helles Lager beer. It's a fall beer Hell. It's the lightest of the Helles, lightest in color and lightest in body, essentially.
Lager. Lager. They call it lager, right, yep. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's your lager, but it's very malty, as Pater Valentin was saying. It's that's all their beers are towards maltiness, and you'll definitely pick up a lot of that in the Andex Helles. And we just opened up the Doppelbock. We're not going directly in line, but this is really the crown jewel of the Andex lineup. Mm-hmm. At slightly over 8% double concoction. It's very smooth, very thick, almost in liquid, and this is the most highly rated Doppelbock you can find anywhere.
Yeah, once the three bottles are empty, the radio station show is over.
I'm going to Zim Schneider tonight, man. Cheers to that. And Lars, what is part of Valentine's job at the brewery, close to Andex?
He should answer that.
Yeah.
I'm a priest, and I have three parishes, and then I, in the brewery at Zellerar, Verwalter, in Vertrieb, wie sagt man's?
He's looking at the business end. He's looking at the business end of the brewery, including sales, including
like the
staffing.
Accounts and communications and all that.
Vielleicht muss man sagen, wir sind eine kleine mittelständische Brauerei mit 110.000 Hektoliter Bierausstoß, also 11 Millionen Liter. Das ist eher klein und mittelständisch.
11 million liters a year. So he just wants to point out that it's not a huge industrial brewery like Hofbräu or Paulaner or Spaten in Munich. It's a small brewery.
How do you guys know? Can you translate liters, Dan?
If I had a calculator, I could.
So what's 11 million liters? How much is that?
It's about 100,000 barrels.
Okay.
So it's still considered in the craft range, you know. Mm-hmm. And then one last thing. So for the Father Valentine, you know, we know about Trappist breweries in Belgium. Are there other Benedictine or monk-run breweries that you interact with in Europe or others that you... like?
Es gibt noch ganz wenige richtige Klosterbrauereien. Mm-hmm. Die anderen sind alle in Lizenz. Mm-hmm.
Gibt es welche, mit denen ihr zusammenarbeitet oder die ihr besonders gut kennt?
Ja, in Österreich mit dem Stift Schlegel, das ist ein Prämonstratenser. Aber ansonsten sind wir eigentlich eher eigenständig und sind ja eher so national distribuiert und 9% gehen in Export.
Mm-hmm. You want to translate that?
Yeah, he said that they're doing about 9% export. There's a brewery in Austria that they work with somewhat closer. What's the name again?
Schlegel
in Austria. But other than that, there's all the other monastery breweries they brew their beer in license, so they're actually not involved like Brewery Andex anymore. They have a brewery that makes the product for them.
That's great. Brewery collaborations are becoming quite a big thing in the United States. Do any of the German breweries collaborate?
We don't want to talk about that. because of InBev, I'm sure everybody heard about it, and numerous other monstrous companies who combine breweries and push them all over the world. So does Munich with its major industrial breweries.
Yeah, we don't talk about those kind of breweries.
Exactly.
We don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of microbrews, Not really. I mean, they all pretty much look for their own distribution and their own part of the business. I mean, sure, they would love to be in InBev because you'd be all over the world, but that also means huge compromises.
Your point was that you were thinking about German breweries collaborating with American breweries?
No, no, small German breweries collaborating with other small German breweries.
Oh, yeah, that
not yet. Happens, no. But there's some guys, like in Köln, there's a Freigeist. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some small breweries. I think that there's a lot of good things to talk about. One thing I want to say is it's so great having Father Valentine on, and we've had a little Auf Deutsch, you know, yeah. Talk. And we're going to come back in a few minutes to take a short break. We'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Southern Pretender by Four Lincolns on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Intellectual, ineffectual, great Southern Pretender, sister, mother, hide your children, ain't you?
So, you like good beer? Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I got Dan and Nikki from Rushing Duck. We got Jen from Girls Pint Out. Sylvester from Jim Schneider and Lars and Father Valentin from Kloster Andex. A couple of things I wanted to say. This is such a cool show. We've got a new brewery from New York, Rushing Duck, and one of the oldest breweries from Germany, Kloster Andex, here. And we tasted a couple of the Andex beers, and now Dan from Rushing Duck is pouring us his, what is it, a red double IPA?
Dan? It's a Kruvy. And it's a red double IPA, very, very hop forward. I know the German guys were saying that they're not that big a fan of hop beers. But just you.
Sylvester. But, I want to give a shout out. Let's take a step back. So it's so great having Sylvester from Zum Schneider on because, you know, he was one of the first, I think, one of the first places in New York and definitely in East Village that he came in and had a beer-centric place. You know, there weren't too many places doing just beer, and for many years, Zum Schneider was a place. If you liked beer, you could go there and get a good beer. And the story for me with my bar, Jimmy's Number 43, was that when I first looked at it, it was in the basement. It was old, but the one saving grace is it had an old kind of beer-only license. And I had to look around and search my soul. It's like everyone, you know, you're running an establishment in New York City. People want liquor. They want wine. And I really liked good beer for a long time, but I wasn't confident enough to open a beer-only place, and I thought, what places do I really like? I said, I like Zum Schneider. I know I can go there and just drink beer, so you know what? It's worth a shot but if Zum Schneider hadn't been there, I probably never would have opened Jimmy's Number 43, so cheers to you, Sylvester.
Thank you so much.
So we all you know, we all build on the backs of our heroes, you know? And also, going around the room, we've got Lars of St. Killian's, too. You've brought so many great people to us. We had our Lebanese brewer, and we've had Andex before. That's right. And a couple of other guys. We met. Did we meet some guy from Scotland, too?
Yes, we were. You actually had the interview of Norman from the Sinclair Brewery, Orkney. Yes. The Scotsplitter guy. Yes, he was online.
Yeah, where they would rather drink whiskey, but they make beer too. You know?
Yeah, that's true. He said that. Yeah.
But it's so nice to be in this room with the real beer people. But this Andex thing, it's so cool. It's like, you know, we've... It's a funny thing. I just did an event the other day with some Belgian beers, and we realized that with everyone so into American craft beer, we forget how great the classics are. There's English, Belgian, and German traditions, and our good friend Horst Dornbusch, who's written a lot about German beers. We've hung out, and he said, you know, now I think if American brewery is going to really open, they should either embrace English, German, or Belgian style and stick to it. And I think that people are just ready. I have a friend who's in wine, and she's like, you know, people are just ready to rediscover Bordeaux. You know, and the same thing, the other day we did an event, and we put out Trappist Belgian beers. And I was like, gosh, you know, when was the last time I had Rochefort 8 or Rochefort 10 or Orval? And honestly, it's been a couple of years, and on Saturday I just drank Trappist-style Belgian beers, and I'm feeling the same way today, just, you know, drinking some classic Germans. And
right.
I don't know how you guys feel, you know, you representing so many different brands, if you're saying that which of these countries or styles people might be ready to embrace. I don't know. And Sylvester, too.
Yeah, we're, as an importer, we're definitely looking after the perfect interpretation for the various styles that are well-known to the general public. So we're looking for the perfect triple from Belgium. We're looking for a good double in Belgium. We found, I think, the best Doppelbock in Germany, and certainly looking for great Pilsners and things like that around the world. And even our Beirut 961 brewery, we signed them on, or we hooked up with them, because the beers that they are making are so spot on. Like the Helles is a perfect Helles, but then on top of that, they make some pretty amazing beers with local Lebanese ingredients
Pillar, yeah.
that only they can make, and you know, that's kind of what interests us.
And then for you, are you traveling the world, or are you just really working in New York mostly?
No, my colleagues and I, we do travel quite a bit. We go to England, we go to Scotland, Germany, Belgium, France, and visit our breweries and, you know, see what they're up to. We're not necessarily traveling as much to look for many new ones, but we're working with our partners.
That's what he got me for, right?
That's why we're still investing. He's our ambassador.
But I think we should bring Jen in, because, you know, because you were talking about all these different countries and styles, and she...
But wait, let me ask Lars first. First, I want to say before that. So, Lars, with your experience, you know, the beer we're drinking now from Rushing Duck, and Jen can join in on this too. You know, this is a red double IPA from New York. I mean, with your experience now traveling the world, how do you guys perceive the American craft beers that we're tasting?
Well, this is, you know... These very hoppy IPAs are by now very particular to the U.S. Like, there's no other country, not even England, makes these hoppy beers, even though that's kind of where they originated from. Not in that quantity, you know. But I think I look for IPAs that American IPAs that are well-rounded, not overly aggressive, and this works fairly well. I'll give that a B+.
And Jen? So far we've tried German beers, and now we're on to American. And tell us how you fit in, what you guys are doing with Girls Pint Out.
So we're an all-female, well, we can get to that later, but a female-oriented beer appreciation group, just kind of trying to close the gap between, you know, the ranks of men who drink craft beer and women who drink craft beer. And we do fun monthly events, and we have several chapters around the nation. It's just kind of grown organically. But I say, you know, women loosely, because we did have a guy one year in Houston a couple years ago have to come in drag to attend a rare beer tasting. And he did, and he got, like, the best protection from his fellow women. It was a lot of fun. So
do you feel like you're exposed to a lot of different styles of beer, or are you just kind of learning the beer scene?
Well, I'm a beer trade reporter by day. I write a newsletter called Craft Business Daily that covers the business of craft beer across the nation. So, yeah, so this is like a side
Do you
project.
Publish that, or does someone else publish that?
It's like, I call it a white paper, because people are like, oh, you write a blog, but, I mean, no disrespect to blogs, it's just like a different model.
It's an industry. So what are you covering in that?
We cover who's buying
sales,
who's,
numbers,
right, trends, what's hot. You know, I had the piggish capitalistic question about Ondex is, you know, how far distributed is it, and how well is it playing in the U.S. right now? That's what I was wondering.
Well, we really just started bringing it in a couple months ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's not very widely available yet. We've just received our third container. into the country overall. So we're at the very beginning of this whole venture.
Very cool.
There's two importers, ourselves, St. Kilian on the East Coast, and another importer that covers the West Coast and the rest of the country.
Right. Very cool. I always wonder those things, you know, because, yeah, you have the old craft and the new craft, the old school and the new school, and, you know, it's always interesting.
So you're one of those secret, you act like you're just this beer enthusiast, but you really know a lot about the industry. So tell us some numbers. What do you know about the beer industry?
Oh, what?
Like, maybe you can teach Dan and Nikki Rushing Duck some things that they would never
know. I doubt that. No. I mean, they live it 24/8, like, try and jam an extra week or day into the week, I'm sure. But, well, no, I was just pouring over IRI and, like, food year to day, Symphony IRI, you know, the scan data. And
What's that?
It's scan data. So, like, off premise, they track, like, the penetration and share of craft beer and, you know, whatever channel, C stores or.
So give us some
food.
Numbers. Like,
so I think the latest 13 weeks craft is up to like $14 share in supers, which is, I mean, that's
what's
pretty
a super?
Impressive. Oh, sorry, grocery stores.
So translate
for,
to
for states. This is my world. I
give
can't
us
get out of it.
Translate to like you're on the radio.
So okay. So, you know, what, a year ago, I think the whole year craft was what?
You mean in the whole country?
Right, in the whole, well, for some states don't scan, but where grocery stores report to scan data, I'm like, I don't know how to break this down. Cause
it's like baseball
whole.
Statistics.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, craft dollar share in supers last year was like maybe 11, and now
11%?
Yeah, of share, right. Of
what does that mean? Of
it means, you know, like your piece of the pie of dollars versus other types of beer, right? So craft versus domestic premiums or sub-premiums, or I think they even measure cider in there.
So 11% in the supermarket are craft beers.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you. And then year it's trending right now at 15 share, right?
Wow.
So that's, I mean, the latest 4 weeks. The
should really be 50.
Weeks.
Let's get Corona
yeah,
out of
right.
there.
Does it include crappy ciders from macro?
You know,
companies?
every different company that tracks this has a different definition as to what they, you know, including craft, that sort of thing. No, cider, I think, is tracked separately. But, I mean, you know, that's probably a lot of overlap.
You know,
with
you're talking a totally different language. Anyway, Lars, do you even know this kind of stuff? Scan data?
I do.
Follow
this
stuff?
Of course he does.
I do. I just wouldn't bring it up.
Why don't you so why don't you guys talk so I can understand this? So you guys study data all the time? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, we're definitely, we are of course in the import segment, and we're very closely monitoring how the import segment is growing, and it is currently growing at a very low rate, at like 1%. However, we consider ourselves a segment that's not tracked, which is the import craft segment.
Okay.
And there's no such tracking in your data as much.
So you don't track import craft. So like Andex is import craft.
Right, okay.
Andex would be import craft, but in this...
But like Bitburger is not craft. Because that's
it's who
hard
would
to
ask.
Say, right?
Yeah, exactly. It
I can't believe you even mentioned Bitburger.
I like Bitburger, and then one day I got a little flyer that said Bitburger is the number one beer in Germany.
It is the number one draft beer in Germany.
But then does it still make it craft? And then
right,
you know, we have so many beers that we like, but this is, I'm getting way over my head, man. This is like tracking numbers. But I guess I think that numbers are good because we want to know, because we want to support the little guys. We want to, and you know, 100,000. You know, barrels of Andex is still a little guy, so that's good to know. Mm-hmm. So it's important to us to know what the numbers are, because if someone isn't really craft, we want to know that, you know?
Yeah. I have a question. So there's no hard and fast rule for what is an import craft brand, right? I mean, is there any sort of, like, you know, the Brewers Association here defines what a craft brewer is.
Right.
But there's no such body, right?
I think you could only go by hectoliter output at the end of the day, mm-hmm. if you want to go that route and set a limit at maybe 2 million hectoliters and say if you reach that, you're technically not a craft brewery anymore.
Right.
That's almost 2 million barrels. I think that's reasonably that's a high mark to set.
Lars, are most of the brands that you guys import technically like import craft brands?
There's no brand. I think Würzburger that we import is probably among the biggest at like just over 300,000 hectoliter. Mm-hmm. Lamsbräu, our organic beer from Germany, does about 200,000 hectoliter. And most of the others are way less than that.
Yeah. Well, Jen, thanks for sharing that. This is the secret. Behind Girls Pines Out is this really smart industry analyst.
Oh, no, I wouldn't call myself an analyst, but thank you. Thanks.
I'm getting scared now. Well, I'll tell you what, I promise you. Dan, what did you just pour us? Because this is like a crazy barley wine.
Yeah, so we just opened up a bottle of our, it's called Dog's Bollocks. It's a English barley wine. About 60% of it is fresh, and 40% of it has been aged in used bourbon barrels between 9 months and 13 months old.
Well, tell you what, this is a great show. We're finished our second segment. We've covered so many things. German beers, imports, data, and right now we're drinking Russian Duck from Chester, New York, and we'll be back in a few minutes again on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, cheers.
Cheers.
You're listening to Lackadaisical by Four Lincolns on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Everybody say hi. All right. Hey, it's, of course, a full studio here. We're at Heritage Radio Network in the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Again, check out heritageradionetwork.org. I think there's a membership drive. If you become a member of Heritage Radio Network, you get a lot of benefits, including fun discounts and the chance to learn more about our shows. I mean, I have to say that right now there's over 20 shows that are really awesome. There's a great cheese show, farm show, chef shows. And, of course, us, Beer Sessions Radio. We're going on almost 4 years now. So we love being out here at Heritage Radio Network and Roberta's every week. And we've got some new producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy. So a lot of new things happening. But in the studio tonight, we've got the Germans versus the Americans. We've got, you know, Zum Schneider and close to Andex. And we have Rushing Duck, a new small brewery from Chester. So Dan and Nikki, you guys, we met this year. You guys are seven-barrel system. We're talking about, you know, numbers and what's craft beer, but you're a seven-barrel system up in Chester, New York on the Hudson Valley. So how many barrels of beer are you guys going to make this year in 2013?
We're projected to make about 800 barrels this year, and if you want to do the math, seven-barrel system, so we're brewing all the time.
Yeah, so what are you doing here in New York?
I woke up at 4:30 to brew and then get here.
But it's hard. You know, a lot of the new breweries we like are like you. You know, there's Barrier and Long Island and, you know, our buddies in Queens, Bridge and Tunnel, you know, that there's guys that are making beer and delivering it and all that stuff. So you guys have actually figured out that already you have someone distributing for you, right?
Yeah, we're a two-person operation. Me and Nikki are the entire brewery from a day-to-day point of view. And early on, we started up. We were distributing the beer too. I was piling in the back of a pickup, and I was driving around dropping the kegs off. And it got to a point where I was on the road delivering the beer more than I was brewing it. And we kind of had to look at each other and stop and be like, "This doesn't make any sense at all." So we were either going to hire a sales rep and a delivery person, or sign up with distribution. Distribution made more sense.
So, are you making beer day and night? I mean, how much are you brewing each week?
We have four fermenters total. And if there's ever a fermenter open, it needs to be filled. Demand is way out of supply.
Some background on these guys. A good buddy of mine, James Ty, who's a Cicerone certified dude who got hired by Yonkers Racetrack to put together a program of 100 New York State breweries. And he's done it. Real great guy, and he'll be on our show coming up soon. But James Ty, last summer we were doing some events in Hudson Valley. And I talked to James, and he recommended a number of new New York State breweries. And you were one of them, and that's how we met. So we can't keep track with all the New York State breweries. I mean, forget the rest of the country. We know that the growth in American craft is the nano breweries and the brew pubs. And every region's having great new, you know, up and coming people like you guys. But just to keep track, in New York is amazing. You know, on Long Island alone, in New York City, and Hudson Valley, and forget the rest. I mean, I was at Cooperstown, Belgium, come to Cooperstown last summer, and they did such a great job of embracing so many like upstate small breweries. It's just the growth is amazing, and it's interesting. And what I like, as opposed to following numbers, like the last segment we were talking about, numbers of the industry and all that, is that actually it's a personal thing where you guys are actually making your own beer. And my first question is, what put you guys – were you a home brewer first, and what made you go over from home brewer to being a licensed commercial brewer?
All right, we're going to get back into the deep origins of Russian Duck. It started when I was 19. I was in college, and I was really unhappy with all the mass-produced beer I was drinking. So I decided to go out and conquer the world and brew my own. But the first couple batches, I definitely have to say, were completely undrinkable. But I realized there was room for improvement. And I got more and more obsessed with it, and I realized I was really unhappy with what I was going to school for. And I got out of college. I went pro right away. I got a professional brewing education, and you know, the next step was to jump in and open our own.
I wish you could see how Lars is opening the beers right now. He's like using one
bottle to open another bottle.
Yeah. And then what made the jump from?
Lars, you did you work on the construction site?
I'm having way too much fun. You know, it's like you got the history. How many 400 years of Klaus Andex? And what are you guys, 1 or 2 years now?
A year and change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the first beer that you guys made, you know, licensed commercially?
We brew a pale ale. It's called Naysayer Pale Ale. It's hoppy. Again, it's American style pale ale. And we brew probably twice as much of that as anything else. We fly through it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, everybody's into wheat beer too on our side. And that's an ale as well. And that seems to be the most popular thing in America. But I have a question. Why is there so much hops in the American microbrews? I mean, one of my theories is that you guys don't get enough wheat to smoke. So you have to put the hops into the beer, because it's the same family, by the way, for all of you people who don't know that. Cannabis and hops is the same family of plants. So that's my question.
So I have a theory. I became addicted to hot sauce recently, and I need everything hotter and hotter and hotter. And I feel like hops are the same way, where like you get a taste for it, and you realize that it's got a delicious floral grapefruit. You know, the flavors you can throw out on hops, so that the terms for it, the terminology for it is so deep. Tangerine, you know, you can get citrus, pineapple, you know, it's crazy. But once you get a taste for it, you just want more and more and more and more, and it just doesn't end.
Kind of like cannabis.
No comment.
Well, I think the other thing is that, you know, with American beer, I think that hops is kind of what made American beer in the Pacific Northwest and California.
Definitely.
And that's when you think of American beer. Also in New York, we've been exposed to Belgian and German beers. I think that people have tried to emulate the West Coast hops. And there's a long story behind it, but I think that one trend I'm seeing is the opposite. I'm trying to see that people are appreciating malt more. So, you know, we've had some 6%, you know, malty Czech lagers, for example, that have a different mouthfeel. But I think people want the mouthfeel, and whether it's some smoked malt or something else. So I feel like that – I think that now American craft palate, people are ready to grow. But I don't know how you feel about that.
I also think that American trends go – well, American craft beer drinkers drink in trends. And it's a good thing, because I do too. So right now, like, the Session Pale Ale is very 4% hoppy, but still drinkable. That's like a trend now. A couple years ago, it was like the most extreme double IPAs you can get. And it's kind of interesting to see how people drink. And as a small, yeah, we drink what we brew what we want to drink. And we have the liberty of doing that because we're so small. And so now it's like, yes, people are very into hops, so we always have a very hoppy beer. But then again, we have people who drink our Naysayer Pale Ale, 5.2% nicely hopped West Coast hops, taste citrusy, but that's our best seller. So it really depends on the drinker.
And that's the least hoppy?
That's No. We actually have an English style strong ale that's 7.3, but it's no hops.
15 IBUs. It's very light.
Yeah. So, but that also goes well. It really depends on, and it's good to have variety because, you know, like we have our three mainstays. It's a coffee porter, it's a pale ale, and it's the English strong. So we have that variety, but we also get to play around. So, yes, we have seasonals. We like to call them occasionals because people really like diversity. And it's like he can be a chef in the kitchen. If you go to the same restaurant every week and they have the same specials, you're going to get bored. So it's like playing around.
Yeah, which is awesome and amazing and exciting and all of the rest of it. Because this is America and that's why we all came here. Because it's the new world and that's where everything works differently. I just came back from Ireland and England and I drank so much Guinness. Oh my God, I hate Guinness, but I drank so much Guinness in Ireland. It's unbelievable. It's so much better over there than it is over here, which they all say. But English and Irish beers are really not that good, in my opinion. I actually rather drink the American really hoppy stuff. And by the way, your guys' stuff is so much better than what they sell here on the bar. You should talk to them.
So it is the Germans versus the Americans.
No, not versus, I'm here 23 equal. Years, I could have not opened what I opened over here back home, I think, would have been much more difficult, and, you know, it's a country of opportunities. You know,
I do love Jim Schneider, and we're definitely going to have you back, Sylvester, but tell us, go back, let's do it. When did you open Jim Schneider, and how did you make that happen?
It's very easy. Year 2000. I came to America in the year 1990, and in year 2000, I opened some Schneider. I go by 10 years.
What'd you do for 10 years? Prostitute?
No, we had a 10-year anniversary. My father came over from Germany, and he fell off the bar.
Good. And in Rushing Duck, you guys also, thanks for coming on. Tell us some of the top accounts. You guys are selling mostly in the Hudson Valley. I looked at on your website. What are some of the top bars in the Hudson Valley that we can find your beers at?
Yeah, most of our accounts are in the Hudson Valley just because we want to be as local as possible. And that's our backyard. That's our home. So I want people to understand where we're coming from. So, I mean, we're from Chester. So in Chester, there's Touch Base Sports Bar. There's Christopher's Bistro. In Warwick, there's Eddie's. Then you have places like the Hop and Beacon, Birdsall House in Peekskill. And then up in Albany, you have Beer Abbey. You have The Ruck. I mean, all these good beer bars, they just embrace it. And that's what they live off of. They focus on beer, and they love it. And people go there because they know they can try amazing craft beer from all over the country, American craft beer mostly, at these places. And, they helped us succeed and helped us to get the word out. We don't have a very big advertising budget. It's just the two of us. So, they spread the word, put us on Twitter, put us on Facebook, you know, and really did the social media out there.
Do you guys wish that you had some priests working for you, like Ruth Luster?
Well, I have...
Well, do priests work for free? That's the first question. Is that why the beer's so good? You have free labor?
Well, being a two-person startup, you kind of have free labor too. We've had friends help us from the very beginning. A lot of people work for free beer. It's amazing. You're in the Free Beer for Life Club. We had our whole floors done and everything. So.
And Jen, have you checked out any breweries in the Hudson Valley, or mostly in New York City?
Peekskill, right?
Yeah, Peekskill is awesome.
They're amazing. They're a great brewery. They're one of my favorites. But how long has there been a craft beer scene, like a real craft beer scene in the Hudson Valley, would you say?
Well, in Orange County, we're actually the second brewery that's ever opened in Orange County. Wow. It's us in Newburgh, and Newburgh opened in April, and we opened in August.
Right.
So there's a lot of education as far as, what craft beer is. But as far as the Hudson Valley, we have people like Peekskill and Captain Lawrence that have been around for a really long time that set that precedent there.
Definitely. Actually, the Hudson Valley is kind of a hidden gem. The bar scene in the Hudson Valley is as good as New York City. It's just more spread out. A lot of people don't realize the Culinary Institute is up in what town is that?
Hyde Park.
So a lot of chefs are opening restaurants, and naturally, beer pairs so well with food that a lot of these fantastic restaurants have world-class beer, and it's actually a really great scene right now.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool. All right, and let's wrap it up. Laura's, want to say anything else? I mean, we've got these great... Let's just... the last couple of beers we had, why don't you tell us about that? Because they're really terrific beers.
We were trying some of the Hefeweizen, the regular Hefeweizen, the Helles Hefeweizen, and the dark Hefeweizen, which are both ales of one of the few ales of Germany that are very well known. And I think the Dunkel Hefeweizen that we're trying right now, you'll agree that it's a different structure. It's very malty and very heavy, and it doesn't have that banana flavor that you would see or taste in a lot of the other German Hefeweizen, and that's on purpose. Specifically,
are you selling all these beers now in the States, or only at some Schneider?
In
only at Zum Schneider.
Everything is available at Zum Schneider. We are selling the bottles all around the country, and we the draft, just because we don't have enough. I mean, we just started with very limited supply, so there's very few places. And in New York City, only Zum Schneider has the draft available.
Yeah? I'm going to make a toast to Padre Valentin, who came from Andex, but also to Sylvester from Zum Schneider, because he's one of the legends of the New York City beer scene. Because of Zum Schneider, many of us...
Let's ask Padre Valentin, what's his favorite beer? What's your favorite Andex beer?
It's not here.
Oh, it's not here, okay. Still, yeah. I'd like
we
to
have,
know.
We have seven beers, and the Hefeweizen is since 1993, since 20 years ago. But the best is Bock Hell. It's not here.
So the best is still to come.
Yeah.
The Hell is Bock. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a special Bock Bier.
So cheers to you. And Sylvester, really, cheers to you, man. Zum Schneider, you're great. You're going to be back on. Rushing Duck, Jen from Girls Pints Out, everybody.
Good luck,
okay.
Guys.
And we got to say a few more words before we go. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And Beer Sessions Radio, supported by the Good Brew Seal. As always, go to Twitter at @beer_sessions, and we'll tweet you back. So thanks to Nikki, Jen, Peter, Sylvester, Lars, and others for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Seiden, and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Everybody say hello. Yeah. Yeah.
Host.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.